This is Tom Winifred with my weekly podcast on the 26th of September. I have very little memory of the last referendum on our membership of the EU, or as it was then, the common market. It was back in 1975. I was only seven, but I have some memories of it because my grandfather was involved in the No campaign. He was a Benite. He was on the hard left, but Sir John Winifred had retired from being a senior civil servant, was head of the Wargroves Commission and the National Trust, and so had some public profile, and he passionately believed that we should leave the common market. At the time, those who said we should stay in told numerous lies. People like Ted Grosser Heath insisted that it was nothing more than a common market. There was no idea that this would become a political entity. He said that the British fishing industry would be protected, and there's no way that British territorial waters would be plundered by European boats. As we have seen, both of those statements have proven to be untrue. As my uncle Chris, Christopher Booker, who shamefully voted to stay in the EU back in 1975, but has since seen the light, has shown in books such as Castle of Lies, Heath knew that what he was saying back in 1975 was untrue. He told deliberate lies to the British people. And the campaign to stay in the EU was well supported. Most of the media was pro staying in the EU. It goes without saying that the BBC was in favour of it, but most of the newspapers were too. And at those in those days, having the TV and most of the press on side really counted an election. Of course, big business was then and now totally in favour of staying in the EU. I remember during the 1990s for the Evening Standard covering the CBI conference when leading industrialist after leading industrialist stood up and said that it would be quite disastrous if Britain did not join the euro. This was the currency of the future, and it was vital that Britain joined as soon as possible. Thankfully, that sage advice was ignored, but big business is again lining up to campaign to say that we must stay in the EU. For the big multinationals, it might make life a little bit easier to be in the EU. The people who run these companies haven't risked their own capital. They are just Uber managers. They mix with other Uber managers and the business, the political and media elite. They have very little experience of life on the shop floor. Most businessmen, on the other hand, that is people running small businesses, have been throughout the 90s in terms of membership of the euro, and indeed today in terms of membership of the EU, far more Eurosceptic. They're the people whose lives are ruined by the ludicrous regulations, the additional costs imposed on them by Brussels. Fundamentally, the EU is a socialist, anti-business organisation. It sees has far more in common with the people ruining the French economy or Comrade Corbyn than it does with small businessmen in Britain. So business is not supportive of the EU, but one of the lies that you will be told in the run-up to the referendum next year is that business backs the EU. No, the CBI backs the EU just like it backed the euro. It was wrong then, it's wrong now. Most businessmen are anti-EU. You will be told that one of the reasons why business backs the EU is that it would be disastrous if we left, because we might be shut out of European markets. Of course, that is a complete lie too. Europe benefits far more from trade with Britain than vice versa. That is to say, Europe sells more to Britain than Britain does to Europe. Were Europe to shut up doors to British exporters, it is inevitable that Britain would reciprocate. Europe would be the net loser, and the EU knows that full well, which is why it's simply not going to happen. We will therefore be told lie after lie in the referendum. Some of the newspapers this time will be on the side of we Eurosceptics. One expects that the Daily Express will be in our camp, without doubt. And it's possible that you may see Euroscepticism from the Murdoch papers, possibly even from the Daily Mail. There will at least be a good sprinkling of Euroscepticism in the press. That the BBC will back the EU is a given, but maybe the influence of the BBC on our national lives is far less than it was in the 1970s, when most of us thought that it was basically impartial and spoke the truth. Now we know that it is just the TV arm of the Guardian newspaper. One would have thought that actually, as we look forward to the referendum in 2016, the no camp, if that is indeed the Eurosceptic camp, should be in good form. The polls are running our way. Sadly, they're running our way, I think, for the wrong reasons, and the big reason is immigration. As you know, I believe that it is in Britain's interest that we have as much immigration as possible. We just need to reform our welfare system. But I am fully aware that that is not the view of the majority of people living in the country today. The majority of people want a clampdown on immigration. They want to see less immigration, both from people within the EU, but also from places like Syria. They ignore our moral responsibility to people of Syria. We are the ones who created the mess there, and they ignore that and just say they shall not come here. So one would have thought, with immigration flowing our way, or the immigration debate creating hostility to the EU, and that hostility will grow, that the no camp would be in good form. Unfortunately, the no camp appears to be in disarray. If one looks at the UKIP conference this week, one can only hold one's head in one's hands. It's important that the no camp is seen to be a broad-based coalition. People like the Labour MP Kate Hoey, God knows what she's doing in Labour, she seems to be right on most issues. James Dyson, the businessman, certain people from the Conservative Party, they should all be in the no camp. It should be a broad-based coalition. It shouldn't be dominated by UKIP because, and this may be unpleasant news to some UKIP members and supporters who are listening, there are quite a lot of us out there who are Eurosceptics. We don't like your party because it has some people who say some pretty nasty things. And if the no campaign was seen to be a UKIP front or a UKIP-led campaign, that would reduce its chances of winning. But it's important that UKIP galvanises its support and plays a part in this campaign. Unfortunately, it seems that UKIP spent so much time fighting each other, have no energy left for fighting the good fight next year. It was quite incredible to see at the UKIP conference that the party's main backer, Mr. Aaron Banks, special backer, was threatening its sole MP, Mr. Douglas Carswell, with deselection simply because he had signed up to support one anti-EU body, not the one that Mr. Banks is backing. This is childish and it is asinine. And if UKIP self-destructs, it will do no favours at all to those of us hoping for a no vote next year. One only hope that people in UKIP can stop squabbling for a year amongst themselves and play a broader part in the no coalition. Having talked about Syria briefly, I mentioned one other thing about Syria this week. I see in the Daily Mail that the Mail and British politicians are attacking our good friend Mr. Putin, the leader of Russia, because he has given tanks and military assistance to the Assad regime. Our policy in Syria has been confused from day one. Surely we should have learned the lessons from Iraq and not tried to overthrow Assad. Saddam Hussein was a very bad man, but he posed no external threat to the West, whatever lies Tony Blair and George Bush told us. When we overthrew this man, who kept together an artificially created country with different tribes, different factions, different religious beliefs, he kept it together with an oppressive but not totally disgusting regime, not one that committed genocide on an industrial scale, with little bit of exception for the Marsh Arabs. When we overthrew Saddam, we created a power vacuum. It was in that vacuum that the monster that ISIS was created. We achieved the same result in Libya. Gaddafi had sort of gone off the idea of blowing up airlines, and he was almost our friend these days. He was certainly good friends with Tony Blair. When we got rid of Gaddafi, We created a power vacuum. There is now chaos in Libya. But we didn't learn from our mistakes. 2 years ago, the House of Commons voted against bombing Syria. At that stage, the people who David Cameron wanted to bomb were the Assad regime. One good reason for not bombing Assad, other than the fact that it would have created a power vacuum helping ISIS grow, was the fact that President Putin was on his side. President Putin operates in a world of realpolitik. He doesn't want to see ISIS grow. Neither do we. Of the various options open to Syria, I would have thought staying under the control of the Assad regime is probably the least worst option. The Assad regime is horrible, but it has allowed, for instance, the Christians of Syria to go on believing in Jesus and following their faith with no persecution. That would not happen under ISIS, or indeed under the moderate Islamofascists who the West has started, who has consistently been arming and supporting. Only Assad guarantees religious freedom within Syria. It's hard to think that the alternative is, any of the alternatives, is going to make Syria a happier place. Yet, we are condemning Putin for supporting Assad. At the same time, we have been funneling arms and training to various opponents of Assad, some of whom have turned out to be members of ISIS. I hardly think that Putin's policy has been the worst policy for Syria. Surely we should not condemn him for what he's doing. Of course, what the West and the East should do is to pull out of Syria. If the people there want to kill each other, eventually the fighting will die down, one would suspect. If we pulled out altogether, indeed, if the Arab nations pulled out and stopped arming various factions there, in the end, Assad would win the war. Assad would control most of Syria, the Kurdish people would control some of Syria, and ISIS would be snuffed out. Condemning Putin for arming Assad really achieved nothing at all. There are far worse people in Syria who the West has armed after all. I'll be back with another postcard in a week's time. I'll speak to you then.